Sorry. Good afternoon. It's Monday, March 6th, and the Senate Committee on Human Services will come to order. Welcome. Thank you all for coming. It is OSCA Lobby Day, and I think today we're going to talk about having safe schools for students and everyone that works there. We are carrying over Senate Bill. So we're carrying over the work session on Senate Bill 53. We're carrying over the work session on Senate Bill 104. We're carrying over the work session on Senate Bill 231. We're carrying over the work session on Senate Bill 275. But we are opening a work session on Senate Bill 760.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 760 requires that public or private officials report suspected abuse of long-term care facilities residents or certain adults with developmental disabilities or mental illness after any contact with a suspected abused person or abuser, not only contact made after while the official was acting in an official capacity. There is a minimal fiscal impact on the bill and no revenue impact on the bill. And no amendments and no subsequent referrals.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 760 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 760 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And I'll carry this one. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 760. Open a work session on Senate Bill 711. So nobody has signed up. This was
That's a public hearing.
Public hearing. What did I say?
Work session.
Oh, I didn't mean that.
Close that work session.
I'm closing all kinds of things. Okay. I'm opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 711. It's Monday. Monday is hard.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 711 establishes a public policy that the Department of Human Services employees whose employment is terminated for violating a duty to report abuse is not eligible for reinstatement of employment with the department. It declares emergency and is effective on passage.
And we have nobody signed up to speak on this today. This is a bill that we had last session. It was a department bill that we put in and ended up not completing. Is there anybody that wants to be heard on Senate Bill 711? Seeing none, I am going to go ahead and so I will contact DHS and see if they still need this bill. And if so, we can bring it back and talk about it again.
Madam Chair, why does it have an emergency clause?
It was just redrafted in the same format that it was drafted in the 2015 session.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson?
Why does it have an emergency clause? Is it an emergency?
I do not know, because it was an agency bill in 2015, and this is just the identical bill redrafted.
Well, when you talk to them, tell them to take that out.
Will do. All right, and one more time, anybody that wants to be heard on Senate Bill 711? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 711, and I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 363.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 363 directs the Department of Education to conduct a study on methods for improving safety and work environments for special education and related staff. It requires the department to report the results to the Legislative Assembly by September 15, 2018. It sunsets on December 31, 2018, and it declares emergency and is effective on passage. And there is a sub-referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Okay. Thank you very much. And we'll start with Soren Metzger, Kathy Forbes, and Monica McKenna. Welcome.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, my name is Soren Metzger, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon School Employees Association, representing 21,000 school support personnel throughout the state. Among those personnel, we have instructional and educational assistants, bus drivers, food service, we have maintenance, custodial, you name it, the school support personnel throughout Oregon. And we're here today to talk about something that's very important to our folks. Now, I do have a PowerPoint presentation, and I've never had one up here before. So, do I just hit the arrow?
I
give you the thumbs up, Corey? Okay, perfect. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Thank you. So let's go ahead and get started. So first of all, I would like to say, thank Senator Lou Frederick for requesting this bill. OSEA has done a great deal of work with his representative. Senator?
It's a senator.
Oh, Lou is
yes.
A senator, isn't he?
Last time I checked, Senator Lou Frederick.
See, I have never seen him in the floor, so I didn't know he was there.
It's Monday.
It's Monday.
We're all having a hard time because it's Monday.
I'm not at all nervous.
This is 2017.
So. It is?
Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, I do believe that Senator Lou Frederick is the requester of this bill. And again, I would like to thank him and the late Chief of Staff, Sue Hagmeier, because when I came to her to talk about this issue of our folks working in special education not having the appropriate supports to possibly avoid injury and provide a high-quality education for their students, she really understood this issue. She was an instructional assistant with the Multnomah ESD. And so I just wanted to put that on record. We're very grateful for their work on this. So Senate Bill 363 directs the Oregon Department of Education to conduct a study on methods for improving safety of work environments for staff involved in special education and related services. Currently, we don't feel that staff working in special education have the supports necessary, the information, or are engaged in the process enough to make a difference. What's happening? There's a number of things happening as a result of short staffing and a shortage in education funding, among other things. Why is this happening? We think that there are a number of reasons why this is happening, but what you'll likely hear from districts is that they don't actually have the funding in order to be able to address this issue. Part of that has to do with the federal cost per special needs student has never actually been fully funded at the 40% level. I want to say it's currently being funded at 16%, which is clearly not adequate to give our folks working in special education the necessary supports and resources to keep themselves safe and provide a high quality education. You'll see here that as the number of students in special education has increased over time, the support personnel who are working directly with these students has actually decreased. So there are some other contributing factors in terms of really taking this issue on and better understanding it. Currently, schools and school districts are listed as exempted industries for Oregon OSHA's record keeping and reporting requirements. Often folks are not our classified school employees are often not involved in the IEP planning meetings, so they're not even familiar with what's on the IEP meetings. Though ORS says that these folks must have access to the IEPs, we're finding that that's not always the case.
And Soren, since this isn't the Education Committee, would you describe briefly what an IEP is, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee. An individualized education program is a plan to work with the student to give all the necessary supports, outlines, maybe the disability, details, the learning ability, and specifically talks about maybe the student's behaviors. And then there is also a portion of the IEP that specifically addresses supports for personnel. And that's where training and additional information about staffing ratios would be detailed. That's my understanding. And Chair Gelser, if you have anything to add.
No.
Okay.
Good job.
Thank you. With that, I feel like all of you hear from me pretty regularly, and thank you for that. Thank you for your support on this issue. But I would like to turn it over to members who can better articulate the types of supports that they would need and how what they do on a daily basis is affected, as a result of not having the necessary supports. And I would just add that these folks love, they really enjoy their job and they love their students. And so please keep that in mind as you listen to what they have to say.
And Soren, can I ask a question about the issue generally and the preferred path for working on it this session? I know there was another bill introduced in the House today that goes beyond a task force and actually starts doing some of the things that need to be done. Do you feel like you need both pieces of legislation?
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, thank you for that question. I was rather surprised to see this bill, but I totally understand that. I had been working with Senator Lou Frederick's office, and that there may have been, I think that this may have been requested as a courtesy for OSEA, and we're grateful for that. But yes, we do see some other opportunities in terms of providing additional supports to staff that are directly related to the functional behavioral assessment, the behavioral intervention plan, including our folks, engaging our folks in the process, you know, giving them the necessary training. And so yes, I will be back later to talk to this committee about that bill.
And I wanted to be sure to schedule this one for today because it's your lobby day and everyone is here, and there wouldn't have been time to do that for the bill that just was introduced this morning, and this can start to lay the groundwork for really making some meaningful progress on the issue in this session, hopefully.
Chair Gelser, member of the committees, I thank you for that.
Thank you. Please go ahead. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. My name is Kathy Forbes, and I have been a special education assistant in Tillamook for 20 years. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 363. I've worked with a range of students with different diagnoses and behaviors, including students who are emotionally disturbed, students with ADHD and autism. And during my years, I've been hit, I've been kicked, I've been slapped, I've had my hair pulled, I've been spit on, I've witnessed coworkers who have been choked, and coworkers and myself as well, with furniture being thrown and pushed at, which has also caused some back and neck and shoulder trauma for myself as well. I didn't know that when I took this job that this is what it would entail. The training that's given, it's only given for a select few and not the whole team. I feel that the educational assistants should have the opportunity to know about the student's behavior before we have to work with the student. And then, of course, once we have that, we need to be trained. I really need you to see me because I represent so many people, and I want you to know that I've been so blessed to work with many students that I've served over the years, and I would never take that back. However, I do feel that my district and others like you should care enough about me to give me me and the teams that I work with the training that's necessary. And they should be able to provide the necessary programs for the students, and so that they can have the best education possible, even if it looks a little bit different than what our general ed classrooms look like. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, hello, Chair Gelser. Thank you. And the committee, I thank you so much for allowing us to come today and speak on this. My name is Monica McKenna, and I started working as a life skills paraprofessional about 13 years ago in Harney County. And I've worked for the district mainly at the high school level. So I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 363. And as a zone director, I sit on the board of directors of Oregon School Employees Association. I have a chance to talk to other members in other schools across the state. And I'm talking about bus drivers, secretaries, paraprofessionals who have similar stories to mine. So I'd like to share my story with you today. So my story is repeated daily across the state. It isn't unique, but it should not be ignored. I started working with a student who was diagnosed with traumatic brain injury, TBI, and he was on an IEP, individual education plan. This student was on the highest spectrum of TBI, and he had PTSD, and he was a victim of sexual abuse. So that created a complicated situation, and one that my district had never dealt with before. So he was a big kid. He's 250 pounds, and he's over 6 feet tall. And I learned the hard way that saying no would trigger him. So when triggered, he would step on my feet. He would kick, hit, bite, pull hair, pinch, spit, you name it. And I worked with him for 6 years. So he stepped and stomped on my feet so many times over the years that I have ingrown toenails on my big toes. And many times he grabbed me, even sexually assaulted me. Excuse me. So I was put in headlocks so he could hug me and kiss my hair. And I watched him do this to not only myself, but other members, classified members of the staff. And he was always truly sorry about these. He didn't want to act this way. But it's a part of his disability that he could not control his impulses. So I want you to know that I cared about this student. I cared about his success. But I couldn't do it anymore. Sorry. So he was turning 18, and I was scared. He was getting bigger. He was a strong kid. And I was afraid for myself. I was afraid for the other students. And I just needed out. It took me 3 tries to be reassigned because I guess I was too good at my job. But it had taken a toll on myself, and I couldn't do it. So I wrote letters. I went through the chain of command. In my 3rd try, I wrote letters to the school board, and they listened. And so I was reassigned. After I was reassigned, though, I have a lot of guilt because they had to have 2 paraprofessionals take my place. And so where there was me, there are now 2. And those 2 paraprofessionals, he hurt them so bad that they have permanent shoulder damage. So they were on workman's comp claims. So I'm here to ask you today, we all need more access to mental health professionals to meet our students' needs. We all need more diverse training so that we can be there and do our jobs. We all need better reporting because when we report these incidents, they go in the student's file and that's where it stays. So it doesn't go up to the state level. It doesn't go anywhere else. And you all don't know what's going on. So we all need to be safe. And in order for this to happen, we need your help. Thank you, Monica McKenna, OSCA.
Thank you. And when you went to work with the student and then the 2 other people that came in, what kind of training did the district provide, if any, before that first day or after any incident of injury?
Thank you, Senator Gelser, Chair. In answer to your question, we had CPI training and crisis prevention intervention. Mm-hmm. It is a good training, but when you have someone that's bigger than you, there are limitations. Mm-hmm. And then the same student at one point with no triggers, no reason, reached over and stabbed me with a pencil in my hand. There was nothing in CPI that prepared me for that. And these ladies went through the CPI training, and they did the right things. But he was strong, he was fast, and he got a hold of them, and that's all it took.
And did the district ever do any kind of specific training to the student, and kind of going to what Soren is working on in the other legislation, a really good functional behavioral analysis and a work with the team around.
They did. And at one point when I was working with that student, I had to advocate for myself to be put on that team. But the other reason that I didn't mention today, the other reason I wanted to be reassigned was they had at that point said, we don't want you on the team anymore. But if you have these people working with this student, they need to have the tools to be able to work with that student. If there are changes to their behavioral plan, they need to be on the ground floor and also part of the planning process. And I know that these ladies were not included.
Well, I would imagine, too, that nobody knows the student's behavior, strengths, and challenges more than those that are working directly with them. So the idea that that input wouldn't be there to understand the student and the risks to both the student, other students, and themselves, is that would be a really significant problem. Are there other questions for this panel? Senator Olson?
Thank you. Kathy, this one's directed at you because you said you'd been in for 20 years.
Yes.
Am I correct in that?
Yes.
What was the procedure when you first started to handle these disruptive people, and how did you protect yourself, or did they give you specific rules to defend yourself?
That's very interesting. No. When I first started, there was no training whatsoever, and it was kind of like, this is kind of odd that they don't give you any training. And then it became apparent that, oh yes, we need to give you some restraint training. And at the time it was a PART and a MANT training, and we got some of that, and it was more on deflection and de-escalation, and that works sometimes. And now they're switching to a new system called OIS, but how it's working in my district, for example, is only a couple people are being trained, not the whole team.
Could you tell us what OIS is?
Oregon Intervention System. Okay. See, I'm not even a part of. I know that's what they're doing, but I'm not part of the person. I'm not going to be one that's going to be trained. But there are people here in the room that I know have had it. But I know for a fact that there are only certain people that get trained, and it's not the whole team. And other people say that they've used this training in residential treatment programs, is what I understand. And so, and they're always, when you talk to those people, they're saying, oh yeah, it's the whole team that gets trained. And here it's just like a select few are being trained, and then if they're absent or not there, then that's one less person to help, or they're asking more and more assistants to be in the classroom with those behavior kids, and they're not given anything. I mean, every single day I go to work, and I work in four different schools in my district, I hear that same thing. It's like, oh, I'm working with these kids, I don't have any training, what do I do? And it's like, what do you do?
And so, Senator Olson, I know you have more questions. We have Senator Frederick for only a moment.
Oh.
So, Soren, don't leave.
No.
Soren, would you mind giving your chair to Senator Frederick for a moment, and then we'll resume questions of this panel?
Representative Frederick?
Thank you for being flexible, Soren.
That's what I was calling you before.
Right down the hall from you.
I know.
Thank you for taking the time. I appreciate this. I'm Lou Frederick, Senate District 22. That's North and Northeast Portland. I have just a few things I wanted to say. It's going to be a repetitive thing, I'm sure, with all the folks who are here. But the central question that this bill attempts to answer is, how do we keep staff and students safe in learning environments? That's the key element there. This bill requires that the Department of Education study methods for improving workplace safety for special education staff and related services staff. It is a first step in helping to ensure the safety of our school staff and the students. And from the data that we glean from such a study, we can better learn how staffing levels and training contribute to a safer workplace. It's not that difficult. That's what we need to be able to do. Today, we have education staff from around the state, and I understand in several overflow rooms as well, to testify on behalf of this bill. I ask that you pay particular attention to their experiences. Let's be very clear. We need to have enough people to work with students. We know that when we have adults working with students, and enough of them, the students do well. If we try to be cheap about it, they don't. So we have to find out how we create the capacity so that these teachers, these students, these parents all these folks are able to actually do well with the students that they are entrusted to work with and to help. And the expectation of training is important, as well as the cross-communication you just heard about, because we don't have those kinds of things taking place at the level they should. So I'll go back to the basic premise here. How do we keep students and staff safe in the learning environment? And all of those things are important. The students, the staff, the safety, and making sure that they get a chance to learn. That's what we want them to do. It's not a warehousing situation. We want them learning because we don't know when they're going to be able to help us in the future, in our culture, in our state. And I say it in another way, and for a number of the, for all the students that we have in the state of Oregon, I want them healthy, wealthy, and happy. Because they're going to choose my nursing home. I want them to know that I did as much as I possibly could. So thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for the good senator before
we... I do have a question for you. I had the OSEA folks into my office, and there was a wonderful group of people. I admire what they do and why they have to do it, but I had a question for you. In your study, you're going to study on methods for improving the safety of work environments. In your study, will you include what they are supposed to do when the person gets violent and how they're supposed to treat them and how do they defend themselves if they're not allowed to touch the student?
This is part of all the intervention study and work that this is one of the key elements. I have a number of friends who've worked in with this the population. This happens, unfortunately, all too regularly. They need to figure out how they can deal with it and be effective with it. They have to, again, the safety has to include that. That's got to be part of the discussion. They can't do it. You can't do it otherwise.
Follow up. Because I was given some examples, and one of those was a lady that was accosted, and other people were around, but nobody would intervene and grab hold because they told me that they're not allowed to. So I don't understand how you can have workplace safety when you aren't allowed to at least dissuade the person from doing what they're doing. And when by dissuading, I mean you have to physically get a hold of them to stop them if they're hitting and punching and kicking.
And you can. There is a lot of misinformation from the districts, and the Department of Ed has written clarification letters about this in the past. And
so
that is
will we see that kind of information in your report?
I'm sure that will be part of it. As Senator Gelser said, there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a belief that somehow you can't do certain things when in fact you have to for your own safety and for the safety of the kids that are around. You have to be able to do those kinds of things. But we have had a misinformation situation take place for a number of years that we've got to figure out how we get past.
And this will clarify it.
I hope so.
Perfect.
Thank you again very much.
And we should have, I think, one of the data points in 2009 when we passed legislation on the use of seclusion and restraint in schools. One of the big reasons behind that was that when people do not have appropriate training to intervene, students and staff become injured in that process. So every year, every school district is required to publish the number of restraints that have been applied and incidents of seclusion, the number of injuries to staff and to students, and to correlate those with training, like who has been trained. So how often is the injury associated with an individual that's been put in a place where they're not trained? And you can go back and look at that data and see that lack of access to training leads to injury for both students and for staff. So we've got pieces of that data, but it sits at the school district level. We don't have a way to, that was for fiscal reasons to pass the bill. The department would have had a fiscal to collect that information at the state level. It would be very helpful to be able to see that. And I think it really goes to this issue of if only some people are trained and none of the people that are trained are in the room when there's a meltdown, then somebody has to pull the two kids apart. Somebody has to get between the kid and the chair. If that person hasn't been trained, they're putting themselves at risk, the child at risk. They may or may not be escalating the situation despite really good intentions. And we can't have that happening. It's simply irresponsible not to provide training to everyone to have the tools they need to do their job.
I remember that bill. I remember I voted no on it because I thought there should be a way to remove a child that was disruptive and put them into a room where they could settle down, and we said we couldn't do that. And I thought that was kind of interesting because unless you train them in self-defense, you know, they're still going to get hurt because a lot of times, and I might be wrong in this, you guys can tell me if this is right or not, a lot of times you can't talk them down because of their attitude. And so if they're not trained in self-defense, then they're going to get hurt unless and it's concerning because I don't want you guys to get hurt doing your job.
Well, there's a difference between the isolation and moving a child out of a space where they could be hurting themselves or other folks. And we were Senator Gelser and I did the tour of some of the isolation rooms. That's a different kind of experience than what we are seeing. You can have a child in a room with other adults and taking a look and being careful about things and safe. But putting them in what we saw was a little larger than a phone booth, if people remember phone booths, a little larger than that, was not enough. And that was not, that's not the way it should be working we saw rooms that were being used by second and third graders, never mind some of the folks who were middle school and above. We have to find a way to be effective with this. And in many cases, it requires more adults in the space. And if we don't provide that, then we are being negligent, my view.
And I can appreciate that, but you can have 10 adults in a room if a child, as the example was, 250-pound, six-footer. Yes. Those 10 adults might not be effective. If, in fact, they can't restrain the child from doing what he's doing, if he attacks one person, what are the other 9 adults supposed to do?
They can intervene.
They actually can intervene.
As long as they have the ability to do that. Absolutely.
Okay.
There remains the ability to intervene. There remains the ability to use seclusion, not in a seclusion cell, when there is an immediate risk to the physical injury of a staff or another student or the student themselves for as long as that threat persist. So students running out into the street, you can grab the student. 2 students are fighting with each other, you can intervene. A student is attacking another staff person, you can intervene. But what you need is the training to be able to know what is the best way to do that intervention so that it doesn't further escalate the situation that causes more. And it's different than self-defense, and I think that the comment that you use, you don't have individuals that are acting in a criminal nature because they're wanting to hurt someone. You have people that are, you've got children that are acting out of trauma and a disability and a whole variety of other issues, and what we need is the training that keeps the staff safe and keeps the students safe, because nobody should be in danger at school, whether they're a kid or an adult, and we know that there's training that can do that, and that's what I really like about the bill that OSEA is working on, is it really gets to the core of that training, because we also know that just on its own, like putting a kid in a seclusion cell or, you know, tying their wrist to their wheelchair, which could happen before 2009, before we passed the bill that said you couldn't do that anymore, that doesn't fundamentally change the behavior over time, right? It just increases that trauma and that tension, and that always falls on the classified staff who are managing all of this and often aren't allowed to the planning meetings to describe the student's behavior, what's triggering them, what they need, and the strengths that they have to build on the strengths that don't take them to those places.
Thank you.
I still voted no on that bill.
Yeah, but
we'll call you up in a minute. When you leave, we're going to let Gladys come up to your seat. Is that okay?
That's fine.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Gladys, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I just wanted.
But you have to come to the table. We have all these crazy rules around here.
Oh, I didn't know.
That's okay. No, and you need to start by saying who you are for the record, so we can.
I'm Gladys Ferris, and I work for Centennial High School. And a couple years ago, I did work with a child who was very, very hyper, very hyper. And like you said, you know, you grab the kid, you put him in the isolation room. Well, I worked with that student, something like that. And when he would run, if he sees a door, he'd run. One time he ran across the street. Good thing he didn't get hit. He can't talk, you know. But what they do is, like, you put him in, you know, take the student, put him in the room by himself, and all he does is jump and all that stuff. that doesn't solve a problem for me and for him. And I even got hurt myself by, I was holding his hand and he twisted me. He saw a door and I just twisted and I fell and hurt my wrist. But we need to figure out a way that how we can deal with this problem like that. We're not allowed to get hold of the kid and just like sit down. We can't touch him. We're not allowed to do something like that. So like if he wants to keep hitting us, we're not allowed to get near him. So how we defend ourselves? What do? We don't have it's just like, just keep kicking. They spit on us and all that stuff.
And I think that's what really goes to the importance of this bill and the OSCA bill is the training and the information about what's allowed and what's not allowed. And
That's the thing. It's just like the kids, you can kick you, spit at you, but we just have to freeze. They'll think, but just letting him keep doing that, he'll calm down. But he's going to always keep doing that. But we know we need to defend ourselves too. So, you know, I mean, it's getting more and more. Every year we're getting more students having issues, and nobody wants to sub. I mean, it's like sometimes we get injured, we get hurt, and they know what kind of work we deal with. Then nobody want to do it. Nobody want to sub. So we can't find anybody to help us. So please.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And Gladys, what's your last name?
Faris, F-A-R-I-S.
All right. Thank you very much.
If you don't mind.
Of course. Senator Olson has a question.
Absolutely. Because I've got to wrap my brain around this. And I wholeheartedly support this. I mean, there obviously is a great need for this. But my concern is we do a report. We study methods. But will you guys end up with the tools that you need to be able to constrain these violent youth? Because you said you just have to sit there and watch them.
What can you say?
Can anybody tell me what you would say to a student to calm him down, other than when they're throwing a 15 or 20 minute tantrum?
And Senator Olson, I think it's important in the hearing. No, I'm not going to answer. These aren't violent youth. These are youth with disabilities that have unmet needs. So there's a difference between calling
violent. I understand, but violent, it means that they're actually physically hurting people. And so what do you do in that situation?
You can't
touch them. So will this report give you the tools to be able to understand and know the correct words to say to them to calm them down?
We need the tools. We need the education. We need more support to teach us how to deal with something like this.
So, Senator Olson,
sure.
I thank you for your question, and I'd like to speak to that if I could.
Please.
Okay. This will be a start. This will give us some of the answers. This will get some of that data out there so that you all who we elect can help us find ways to solve these problems. It's going to take some study first. It's a big issue. There are a lot of variables, and I think that this is a great start, and it's needed. So I appreciate you asking these questions, and I appreciate your candor and your concern. So, yes, I think this is going to help.
Any further questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much. All right, next up we have Terry Harris-Jones, Melina Wirth, and David somebody. David N.
It's still the same panel.
Oh, okay, yeah. then you're good. Jared Mason Gear.
This is just a new one. Lou came in.
Oh, right, yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you very much, Chair Gelzer, Vice Chair Olson, and members of the committee. My name is Terry Jones, and I'm an Oregon School Employees Association Zone Director. I represent members from Oak Ridge to Florence and down the southern Oregon coast. As a classified employee, I run an elementary school library in Coos Bay. I would like to share an incident that took place in my zone last week involving a secretary. The secretary has had Oregon Intervention System, OIS, training. Her office is located adjacent to a check-in, check-out room where students whose behavior is disruptive or interfering with the learning of their classmates are then taken for a timeout period. Our secretary was asked to help another classified employee with a first grade student who needed to be escorted to the check-in, check-out room. The student began throwing things at both employees from 2 to 3 feet away and was restrained. Our secretary ended up with bruising from wrist to elbow and received a bite impression. She did go home. She did request assistance, which took 20 minutes for additional help to arrive before another employee, an administrator, was able to come in. She went home following the incident but returned to work the next day. Her bruises were photographed, and she sent those images to her principal. The secretary said that she knew when she took the OIS training that she would be put in situations where she would get hurt, and she accepted that as part of her job. She acknowledged that her injuries were made worse because she was wearing short sleeves. Had she been wearing a sweatshirt, then the damage would have been less. The student was known to be a pincher and a scratcher, and had she been wearing a sweatshirt, it would have protected her a little bit more. She also mentioned that the student's behavior has been escalating throughout the school year and that check-in, check-out has not been a successful intervention for the student. The secretary also said, "My work ethic and integrity does not allow me to pass on a difficult situation to someone else. My principal has recommended that I not renew my OIS training. As a secretary, it is not within my job description. But if someone needs help, it is not in me to say no. My principal is older, and physically, I am better able to handle a disruptive student. I love my job. There is no better job that I would rather do. I love the kids." I am sharing the secretary's story because it represents similar stories that I hear weekly from other non-special ed support staff, like secretaries, library media, playground supervision, custodial, food service, and bus drivers. She and others will continue to put themselves in harmful situations if it protects their students and their coworkers, because there isn't an alternative. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Welcome.
You. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. My name is Milena Worth, and I come from one of the furthest eastern Oregon communities of Baker City.
Welcome.
Yes. So the majority of our OSCA members are classified employees, and our district work with students in special education. So I also am the building representative within my union in that local chapter. And I had a classified employee show up very distraught, very upset. She had left the class because of an injury that had just occurred to her. And there had been many reports about these incidents resulting in injury, and nothing was done to address the matter. The director would just give it to another person and just pass it on without informing them of these incidents and these issues. And of course, we're not open to go or have permission a lot of the times to go into those IEP files and read them ahead of time before they're assigned to these children. So what she did was she came to me with actual photos of her injuries and wanted me to keep them safe because she didn't know where this was going to go, because her husband was a police officer. And so she actually left her workplace, had to get medical attention. So not even an hour later, the director of special ed came to me and said, "I understand you have some photos about the injury to this employee." I said, "Yes, I do." She asked me to keep them. "I want those photos." That was the demand. And I said, "I'm sorry." She gave them to me. Therefore, I'm going to keep them safe for her. And he says, "I want them." I asked, "Why would you want them?" And he actually said, "I don't know, but I think I'm supposed to have them, or I should." And so I refused to give them to him. And so I said, you need to ask her for those photos if you want to bring attention to them. I have no idea. So in this small community, many of you are familiar with Baker City, everyone knows everyone. This director is very close friends with the father of this child, who was also in the police department. So more than anything, he was protecting the father, not understanding really what his role was. So I had a quite frank conversation with the director, and I said, what is your role? How do you avoid these things? What can we do to help you help these situations? And he said, frankly, I don't know. I have no idea what to do. All I know is that these children have a right to an education, and we have to provide it to them according to their individual education plan. I don't know what my role is, and this is all I have. And now, actually, we started our conversation as a team, as OSCA, our local chapter, with our director of special ed. We have meetings with him every month to address any issues. We now find him in the class or with the child. When it's escalating, he shows up to be with that child. Even with, he doesn't have training. He doesn't understand really what to do other than just keep him from hurting someone. So I want to see that as a positive, because we built that relationship and now we're working as a team. However, we have no directive. So I ask that when you're conducting these studies on methods for improving, what I'm wanting to see is the safe work environment for educators working with these high-need students, is please consider every one of these stories and more that we have in writing that have been presented that are affected directly. Listen to these day in the life, is what we call them. We are now speaking to our board every chance we get during public comment, and we come in and we share a day in the life of, and not, it's not always negative, but it's about solutions, and it's about how we love these children, because that's what you just heard, is how much all of these people behind me love our children as myself. So if you can read those letters, we ask that the report include all of the resources necessary we want to, in order to provide the appropriate level of training of our staff, and not just the level of staffing. And I would really appreciate that. And I thank you so much for your time, Chair Gelser and the committee.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Jared.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. For the record, Jared Mason, here representing the Oregon Education Association. We represent 44,000 educators around the state, and that ranges from certified classroom teachers, community college faculty, school bus drivers, special ed assistants, the full range of educators, serving collectively 600,000 K-12 students and 70,000 community college students around Oregon. We join in urging your passage of SB 363. I think I and members of ours from OEA have spoken individually with each of you. The kinds of things that we're seeing in the classroom that our members are experiencing are increasingly severe. I hear stories from members hit in the head and getting stitches after a student's thrown a stapler or thrown a desk, seeking some help from school administrators after there's ongoing bites and scratches that draw blood on their arms, and the school administrators essentially will open up a catalog of safety gear and say, why don't you select some neoprene sleeves from this catalog, and that's the best that I can do for you. We had a member who had to retire early after a student stomped on her foot and shattered all the bones in her foot, came back to the classroom and found that she couldn't stand for 7 hours a day any longer, and so had to end her career. Those are just a sampling of the types of experiences that our members have. And it really is an intractable problem. And I think Senator Frederick referenced the need for more resources, for more adults in schools. That is clearly a big piece of this problem, is we do not have adequate resources invested in our schools. We do not have adequate adults in each of these circumstances to keep themselves safe and to keep the students safe. And these things are really traumatic for students, too. I mean, you think about a beloved teacher getting hit in the head and drawing blood and having to get stitches after somebody's injured them. That's not just traumatic for the educator. That's traumatic for the students in the classroom as well. And these things really need to be addressed. To Senator Olson's earlier questions, certainly training is a really big piece of this issue. Training is a piece. Additional resources is a piece. Improved reporting is a piece. All these things need to come together, and we think the way to do that is by increasing the urgency with which we address this as a state, making this official process that we can come forward with a report that we can begin to implement coming forward through the coming years. So urge your support and appreciate your attention to this issue.
So, Jared, I don't know if this question is better geared towards you or to Soren, but I know in speaking with members of both organizations, OSCA and OEA, in my local districts and local administrators, that it seems that there is an increase in challenging behavior, especially from very young children, kindergarten through third graders in particular, many of whom have not yet been identified as special education students and therefore don't have access to a functional behavioral analysis, to additional staff in a classroom. Are you seeing and hearing that? And how would you see this task force addressing students that aren't identified as students with disabilities that are really struggling to maintain their behavior in the classroom?
Senator Chair Gelser, that's a good question. I think, and I'd be happy to allow Soren to answer as well. certainly, our members are reporting that the age with which a lot of these really severe behaviors are occurring is increasingly and shockingly young. I mean, in a lot of cases, it is students that are just coming into first grade or kindergarten that are, in a lot of cases, demonstrating some of the most difficult behavioral behaviors. And I'm not, honestly, I mean, so a lot of these things are really difficult, and I don't know that I have the answer to how do we deal with that specifically. I mean, I think it's in part of why this bill is necessary, why, we have some other conversations occurring around some potential task forces and so forth to continue to explore these. If I had that answer, I'm not sure that I would be asking for this bill, I guess.
And I think part of the point of the question is focusing on special ed alone too restrictive, or do we need to be looking at all students? And it looks like you have something to add there.
I do. In Baker City, we actually, because there's more and more what we call runners in kindergarten coming in, not prepared to be in the school setting. So Baker City's solution was, let's move them to a separate setting, those kids that are not able to literally sit and be considered to be in the classroom because they're more of a, for lack of a better word, stop the education at that time. So they're actually in a separate building with a teacher and an ed assist and a counselor, actually, a developmental counselor, in a classroom during the day for short periods of time, several periods of time. Granted, they're still not on an IEP. They have a behavioral plan. And so this teacher or these instructors are assigned to provide that type of, to create new habits for these children and teach them some new habits about expectations. So what I had proposed several times to the board was, why are we not able to test these children in Head Start before they come into, a lot of cases, we don't have Head Start inside our schools. They're separate or preschools. And maybe I, as an ESL interpreter translator, will go and test the children ahead of time for ESL in preschool, because I can do that, to know if they need the ELL services by the time they come into kindergarten when we serve them. So my feeling is we should probably try to figure out a way to do that. And I know Baker's trying to do the best they can, and they're actually documenting the process because this is just like a practice run. And so far, they've had some good results with these children. So that's something I think we're trying to be proactive with, because we want to include the children in the classroom and just kind of literally they're walking into a classroom setting.
And so a lot of times when little ones, I mean, 5, 6, 7-year-olds or who we're talking about, are engaging in this extreme behavior, it's a, behavior is usually communicating something and often some pretty significant childhood traumas. How frequently are you seeing these kids being child welfare involved, or is your staff calling child welfare asking for help related to untreated substance abuse, mental health, severe neglect at home? Is that a factor in any of this?
Yes, actually, that's who, it's through DSHS, it's called New Directions, and that's the counselor that is in that classroom at the time, and that's what she's addressing. She's documenting all these issues with the children, as well as working with the families and doing home visits to empower them as well.
Are there any other questions for this panel? Senator Olson?
Yeah, of course. Just out of curiosity, I mean, you're talking about 5, 6, 7-year-olds. When they're determined to have this problem that you foresee, does that follow their record all the way through, so each new grade understands what is ahead of them?
Most of the students have a cumulative file. We call it the CUM file. And teachers are addressed or asked to go through those files before they get that student in their classroom, and with hopes that all behavior issues or situations and everything about them should be in that file. Now, that's the other case. In many cases, a paraprofessional that's going to work with that student, they don't have access to that file. There's a list of people that have permission to go through that CUM file because it's protected by those laws, that it's usually the teacher, the principal, a counselor, or an administrator, but not usually the paraprofessionals are allowed to look at that file before they get to work with that child.
Okay, this is silly. Why not?
Good question. Why?
Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Chair Gelsa, if I may just return to your previous question. You'd asked the question of whether this was an issue that was specific to special ed or if this was an issue that pertained to general education more broadly. And speaking just for the Oregon Education Association, certainly we feel that I mean, so in our organization, we've broken this up into two different issues. So we have a task force inside the Oregon Education Association working just on special education issues and issues such as that have been described here. And then we have a different task force that's working on broader disciplinary and behavioral management issues. Just for the record, this is absolutely an issue that is affecting all levels of education and all types of education. I want to be really clear about that. I'm not going to advocate that we would amend this bill, but do want to just state for the record that there are issues, and I think there are some other pieces of legislation out there that are going to be really important as well to getting at some of those other issues that are affecting all other students.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And I guess for Jared, Soren, could you come back for a second really quickly? Jared, could you stick there for a second?
Oh, sure.
Thanks.
This
is
dropping traffic.
And so I guess for both of you, as you're working on the special ed related issues, what kind of outreach and collaboration are you doing with the disability community?
Chair Gelser, member of the committees. Chair Gelser and members of the committee. I have reached out to a number of different folks and am asking for feedback on some of the things I'm working on, including FACT, the Oregon or Disability Rights Oregon, and CDDC, no, DCC, Leslie Sutton.
Yeah.
Leslie Sutton.
Developmental Disabilities Council.
Yes. And so I'm making sure that their voice is being represented in this process as well.
Thank you.
Chair Gelser, to date, the work that we've done internally at Oregon Education Association has been made up entirely of educators, and it has been an internal work group. As that expands out, we're still finalizing that work and fully anticipate and will commit to engaging those other communities. Right now, it's just been internal work.
Thank you very much. And then, Soren, I just wanted to give you a chance maybe to Senator Olson's question before as a study enough, if you wanted to talk about some of the other work that you're doing that we might see later.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, I would love the opportunity. Thank you. The Oregon School Employees Association has really been working on this issue for a number of years now. Back in the 2013 legislative session, we were able to pass House Bill 3045, which required school districts to establish a policy for reporting staff injuries because up until that point, injuries weren't even being reported. And those are injuries occurring in general education, special education. And so the reason that we wanted those reports was because when we tried to work with the with Oregon OSHA or the Oregon Department of Education, there was no documentation that this was even a problem in our schools. And so we were successful in passing that bill. However, we have since followed up with those agencies, and it turns out because of So with Oregon OSHA, I mentioned this earlier, currently schools and school districts are listed as exempted industries from record keeping and reporting requirements, so they don't actually have those reports. We're currently working with at the agency level to remove that exemption so that we can begin to see those reports and again provide those, have that conversation to provide those supports to staff. Not only that, we are working with Oregon OSHA on safety committees, and then legislatively, we thought it would make sense to, to pass or to introduce a bill that would require that our classified folks are involved in the IEP planning meetings. And it turns out that that probably is not the best place for them to be, just because there's a lot of people, and I'm told that parents don't always know their rights, and there's limited resources at the district level. So we said, okay, fine, let's go ahead and see if these folks can actually have get access to the individualized education program, because it's a very detailed plan on what are the needs of the students and what are the supports and how we can better serve our student population. And it turns out that OAR say that districts must provide access to the individualized education program to our folks, to educators. And it turns out the people sitting behind me will tell you that that's not always the case. They don't actually get access to that information. And not only are they not getting access, but they often are not included in those meetings, not included in that conversation. They're not trained on how to even implement. They have, you know, it's just, you know, you're here and here you go. So looking at federal legislation and requirements, we saw an opportunity with the functional behavioral assessment, which is something that is required through IDEA and so federal requirements that if there is a behavior or an incident and there is a student who is maybe suspended for a period of time, that a functional behavioral assessment be conducted. And then the functional behavioral assessment specifically looks at the behaviors of the students, what are the triggers, and in every single education environment, including on a school bus, in the classroom, in the lunchroom, in the library. And then following the functional behavioral assessment, there's a behavioral intervention plan, which is the plan specifically how to address those behaviors, and ultimately reduce or eliminate those behaviors. And as you can imagine, I was really excited to see to read that, because that's exactly what our folks have been asking for. And then speaking with the Oregon Department of Education folks working in special education, I got clarified that in fact the functional behavior assessment and behavioral intervention plan were in fact tools that could be helpful for our folks in providing these additional supports. And then develop legislation that just was first read today, House Bill 3318, which would require that any time there is an incident that resulting in injury of staff or other students or oneself, that a functional behavioral assessment be done. And not only that, that there also be a behavioral intervention plan, and that the folks who are working directly with a student, as I understand it, that the only way that these can actually be effective is that every single person who's working with these students are actually engaged in that process, and not just engaged as in sitting in a room and being quiet and not having a say, but actually giving feedback, meaningful feedback and input and follow-up, and saying, you know, in fact, that doesn't actually work. That does not de-escalate a situation. That's not, you know, given the student's learning ability, that is not the best way to teach the student math. And what I'm hearing from our folks, you've touched on this earlier, that when they're working directly with the students, they have a really good idea of what works and what doesn't work. And then not only that, this bill would also require that these folks get the necessary information, training, and or supports to be effective in their job. So thank you for that opportunity, Chair Gelser.
Thank you. Any last questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much. And thank you, everybody, for coming today and for your commitment to your students. I think that this issue is a very important one. Your students deserve to be safe. You deserve to be safe. And it's very clear to me when you're talking about this, the compassion and care you have for your students, even when your students challenge you and that. There just aren't words. And I can say on a personal level, I have a son with an intellectual disability that's 22. And so all the way from the time he was 6 months old, members of your association have been a really important part of his life. I remember one time he was waking up from anesthesia, and it was not my name that he said first. It was Pam, who was his EA. So we all know who really matters. And thank you all for being so important in the lives of so many kids, including my own. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 363, and we are adjourned for today. 363, and we are adjourned for today.